A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast. See, I've got a positive. I can't even say it properly. That's how positive I am. Got a positive kind of tone going on at the moment because all right, we lost the cup final, but we were there, didn't we? We did. I don't know if it was an echo of glory, but there was an echo. Wembley wasn't very full. See what I've done there. Well, here we go. This is a voice that needs no introduction. We have podcasting royalty on the line today, in a certain Mr. Well, Flav. Let's just call him. Let's call him what you all know him.
Do you know? Thank you, mate. Thanks for having me on. Do you know what people keeps happening? People keep calling me Flav Bateman on stuff like. I was on. This is not. I'm not trying to be a humble brag here, but I was on.
But
was
you are
on,
just a little bit, isn't
it? I was on a semi, quite a well-known radio station, and they introduced me as Flav Bateman. This is just something I made up when I made Twitter. I didn't think it was madness.
When problematic things didn't matter.
Yeah, because the Bateman stands for Patrick Bateman. He's a psychopath in a book called American Psycho, and he's
a murderer of women.
And I mean. This is not something I'm proud of, but, you know, there's a kid that gets murdered one in the book, which is about as dark as you're going to get. And, like, when I started, do you know what I actually did? This is so weird. 10 years ago, I opened the account in 2009, I think. And I was going to do a Patrick Bateman parody account.
Is that one of those, like, those early days of, like, I'm going to be a genius for this. This will be a good idea.
Yeah,
and then
Well, I didn't know what Twitter was back then. It wasn't what it is now. It was completely different. But it's always funny to me that I get introduced as Flav Bateman because that's what it says on my Twitter account. My name's not Bateman, nor is it Flav.
It was all a bit of a Wild West back then. Safe to say I paid a service to just completely wipe my Twitter clean.
I should do that. How much? What is that service?
I can't remember. It was a few years ago now, but there's quite a lot out there. It cost me about, I don't know, 50, 60 quid. Done.
It's cheaper than losing your career, isn't it?
All my crimes gone. Anyway, Tottenham Hotspur. How is it to be on the other end of being questioned? Let's put that to you first of all.
Yeah, it's good. It's really good. It's because it's like I don't have to do any work; just can talk, which is great. Being you know, driving a show is you have to think of the next question. You have to actually listen to what people are saying and make sure that you move it on correctly and that. And while you kind of get a second nature for it after 10 years or 11 years or whatever, 10 years we've been doing it, it's not as exciting or not as interesting as just being asked questions. It's much nicer, yeah.
Yeah, just kind of sinking into it. So I'll give you a nice easy one to start with, then, mate. Like you know, cup final. How are you feeling?
Oh, horrible. And I didn't even want to. I didn't even. You know, I was kind of banging on about this being a free hit before the game. Just go, well, it's Man City. It's Pep Guardiola. You know, of course we're not going to win. Of course it's impossible, isn't it? But. Of course, it isn't impossible, and I really hoped we'd win. It wasn't a free hit, and it felt like anything other than a free hit when Laporte scored. You know, what I mean, it was crushing, and the most crushing part of it is we didn't deserve anything from that game. We in terms of you know this bottled thing that Tottenham gets thrown at us every time we lose an important match, but it felt like we bottled that. It felt like we feared Manchester City, and it wasn't giving them too much respect. It was genuine fear. It was an awful, awful, spineless performance. And I put that down to
Ryan Mason. Things. Get him out.
Well, we're starting a group. We're not calling him Ryan Mason anymore. We're changing his name subtly until he earns it. He's now called Brian Mason until he wins a game, and then we'll call him Ryan Mason again. You can't expect much from him. I don't blame him. I don't blame him for being in awe or the situation or not being able to tactically compete with the best manager that the game has ever seen, probably. Maybe. You know, he'll be remembered as a legend of management and playing days, Pep Guardiola. So you can understand over 90 minutes that he got out-fought and outplayed. Add to the fact that they have an embarrassment of riches, you know. It's difficult enough when we played them with Jose Mourinho, two times which we beat them, by the way. So I don't blame Ryan Mason. It's not, you know, his subs weren't correct, in my opinion. You know, this Sissoko coming on was almost like a resignation that we're never going to win this game, especially when you had Ndombele on the pitch who could have changed something. He could, you know, we know how good he is, and in high pressure environments where he has no time on the ball, he does things that almost any other player can't. So it would have been great to see him just to try. And he made the wrong decisions. But he's 29, he's a novice, he's never managed at this level. He's up against the best coach in the world. And, you know, we lost the game. My blame is with Daniel Levy. He's the one that has to take responsibility for this, in my opinion.
Do you think then that, like, you know, other than, because you've spoken about it on the Fighting Cock recently, about the sort of various WhatsApp messages flying around, and other than the part where Mourinho said he was going to expose Levy for the cunt that he is.
Yeah. Straight out the words of Jose Mourinho's mouth. I'm going to expose Daniel Levy for the cunt he is. Yeah, he's definitely said that. That definitely wasn't the voice of the bloke who wrote that WhatsApp.
Shout Sacramento trying to drag him back. Colin Jose ain't worth it.
Leave it, Harry.
Leave this fucking club. Leave the club. You're going nowhere here.
Is that wrong?
Other than all that, do you think there could be anything in the idea that they clashed because Levy's priority was very much over, was qualifying for the Champions League, for making sure we had the best team available to us for the Premier League versus the Carabao Cup, which, lovely day out, bit of silverware, but, you know, at the end of the day, let's be honest, a bit of a tin pot in comparison for kind of somebody who is probably, you know, wired the way that Levy is shown that he is over the past few years. Because, I mean, other than Harry Kane, who you can imagine is just in that stratosphere of players that just says, I want to play a cup final, so I'm playing, and the club say, okay, fair enough. It did seem to be that it was, if you were to compare it to what we played in the Premier League against Southampton a few days earlier, this actually seemed to be a weaker side.
Yeah, definitely.
And I couldn't help but feel that maybe, you know, Mason, he's obviously very young. He does love the club. He wants to do right by them, but he's probably also very conscious of the fact that his hand isn't that strong here. He's been dealt something by. I know I'm doing one of those kind of, you know, I've got all the pictures and lines connecting things on my corkboard, but it just felt to me like there was a bit of an agenda at play, shall we say, that the Carabao Cup was a free hit. Premier League is more important. Save the best for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that undoubtedly, without question, if you ask Daniel Levy, would he want the League Cup or a top four place? 100%, he would do that. And if you would have asked Pochettino, so, you know, a manager who's much loved at the club, he discounted the League Cup as inconsequential. Absolutely. Didn't work. There's no point in it.
Even the FA Cup.
Really. And the FA Cup. He was only interested in Champions League and interested in Premier League. And to his credit, that mentality got him close enough. Do you know what I mean? A lot of people sort of look at Pochettino's time at Tottenham, because he didn't win a trophy, it was almost like a failure. That's bullshit. It wasn't.
Yeah,
it was what he did is get us there and get us to a position where we could win it. And we didn't, you know, for many reasons. And, you know, I know it's a cliche, but in one game, anything can happen. And you know, luck we would have it against us. We didn't beat Liverpool, and we never really were able to catch Leicester, but then again, no one else could either. So, you know, it's one of those things, but it's in terms of the value of the League Cup, it's completely valueless. It means nothing other than just to say that we'd won something. And that's important because that could lead on to other things. And as fans, do you know what, like being really honest, if someone said to me now, you could have a top four or you could win the League Cup, I'd probably take top four because it doesn't get us to the point we want to be faster by winning the League Cup. It does get us faster or the next rung up on the ladder if we're in the top four. And that's a shame because it should all be about winning things no matter how what level of trophy that is. We should be interested in winning it all. But to get to that point where we can win everything, you need money and that. Now, the question is if we do get into the Champions League and we don't spend anyway, then what's the point? And in which case, if it was that Levy and Enoch were going to be their usual pragmatic self in the transfer market, despite finishing top four, then I'd rather have the League Cup because that means, you know, we're not going to do anything anyway. So, if we get into the top four this season, if we do, massive if, then the League Cup failure wouldn't be as painful as it has been this week. And don't get me wrong, I don't want anyone to twist my words. What I mean is I'd love to win the Cup, but I'm hopeful that we can return to the sort of form that in 2016 where we nearly won the league and then, you know, again, followed it up next season by finishing second.
The problem,
and,
yeah.
Sorry, go.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, just touching on your point, Neckers, I think you sort of gone on to something quite interesting there, is that there's like a strange sort of dichotomy, like this conflicting feeling at the moment being a Spurs fan where, you know, obviously the whistle blows, the cockle crows and all that, but the second that happens, you want Tottenham to win, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
But when you do have these moments when you're sort of trying to detach the kind of emotional investment that you have into the club, into everything that it means, everything that it symbolises, and you look at kind of things in a way that a money man, a businessman might do, and you kind of ponder, like, what is best for the club and what's best for the new direction. And it just seems to me that, like, almost in a way that, you know, had we won the Carabao Cup, or even if we do go on now and win the Europa League, but qualify for the Champions League through the Premier League, it just validates somebody like Levy to say, club, the squad doesn't need that much investment. Like, it's like, and I never, like you say, I don't want my words to be twisted either. I don't really want to sort of float these uncomfortable ideas that I'd rather Tottenham lose, because I never do. I never ever want to see Tottenham lose. But it, like I say, it's just this conflicting feeling that if we do go on now, have a great run in the Premier League, and we do manage to get in the Champions League, once again, it's going to be like, well, maybe Sissoko and Winks don't need to be moved on that quickly. Maybe Dyer doesn't need to be moved on. Maybe our right back options are all right because we got there in the end. You know, and it seems to be that we always make this rod for our own back. Like Pochettino's success was superb, but you could see the way he broke after that Ajax semi-final. You know, everything that came to the fore there, and I think probably quite how. I'll be honest, on reflection, I think the fella, honestly, going into the Champions League final seemed a little unhinged. And I don't really want to say that in a derogatory fashion, but just where his priorities were, things like making sure every single member of the team was on the pitch for the photo beforehand and giving interviews about lemons and stuff like that to the press ahead of a Champions League final, it suddenly felt like we were, you know, the novelty team at an FA Cup draw or something like that. And
I think, yeah, well, he's put under a lot of pressure, wasn't he,
well,
to get there?
And this is what I mean, you know, the sort of the pressure, everything that Pochettino gave to that role, he was perfect. But that's why we achieved what we did under him, because he was a man that gave every sinew of his being to that job and elevated Tottenham to a place where really we had no right to be competing there. Like, we didn't, you know.
True.
Chelsea, Man City, they've spent what, half a billion pounds
well,
on their squad.
This is it. Just something, it was the start of what you just said there in terms of, like, if we do get into the Champions League and it does give Levy validation that the squad doesn't need to be as upgraded as possible, that's where his major failings have been. He's not going beyond, not actually realizing actually despite the team finishing in the Champions League and in Champions League places and sort of, you know, getting us into next year's competition, that we've performed at the very peak of our ability to get there, and the squad really needs an overhaul and some fresh blood in there and a new manager. Like, even if Ryan Mason gets us into the top four, he then shouldn't be given the job for the next 3 years. We need to be proactive in what we do, and realize, and like, Enoch's reputation is survived this summer, but depending on what they do, in my opinion, if he doesn't, regardless of where we get, if he doesn't significantly invest in the team and get a manager in that's sort of suitable for the size of the club that we are in, then it's just going to become more and more and more toxic. And really, what I predict might happen, Jack, is he'll blame the coronavirus, and he'll blame, you know, the repayments that are owed on the stadium still. And there's always a reason not to spend. And anyone who's listened to the Fighting Cock will know that I've backed him and defended him for a long, long time.
You've been called a happy clapper and all that sort of shit as well.
I get a lot of stick for that, like saying, like, you're backing Levy and, you know, you're just sort of, you know, you're on the take. Yeah, it's nothing as severe as that, but it's just like people disagreeing with the fact that I'm backing Levy. And I think what he's done for the club fundamentally and largely has been good. He's improved us and moved us to a position where we even have the right to suggest that we're, you know, a Champions League side. You know, the decisions that he's made, both good and bad, have led us to a position where we are right now. Massive stadium, massive global appeal, massive, brilliant training ground, and been able to attract managers of the calibre of Jose Mourinho, whether you like him or not. That was a stellar coach that we had at our club for 17 months. You know, might be a bit stale, but he was a big, big name. And that's because of what Daniel Levy's done, you know. So I have been a backer of him for a long, long time. I just now feel like, all right, I get it. Good business, a lot of money coming in, top 10 Forbes, all that. But we need to see the commitment that you've seen at Chelsea, but more to the point, Liverpool, because they've done it without the backing. They didn't have what Man City and Chelsea had. They had a business model, an FSG going in there and them losing players like Coutinho, Suarez. They've lost loads of players through the years, and they've replaced them.
I mean, that's the thing, though. I mean, what they did ultimately, though, isn't it? They made a footballing decision at the right time. You know, they've sort of been through those similar cycles that we have. I think there's some parallels you can draw along the way. I think,
I've seen
kind of like, even though they've always had a bit more success, I think a lot of that comes with the prestige and the heritage of Liverpool, certain people being scared of them, the effect they can take into games. But although it's not a direct comparison, you can sort of see in our cycles, if you look at like Yol, Julia, if you look at kind of, you know, Brendan Rodgers with Pochettino, like it's always teams getting there, getting a bit closer and falling away, but you can always sense there's incremental gains in each of these projects down the line. But ultimately, with Klopp, you know, they were a fucking fantastic team, and they came very close to it. But then soon enough came that point when Klopp just said, look, I need a better keeper and I need a better centre-back. And what did they do? They went out and they just spent the money. They didn't haggle. They didn't get into this kind of protracted kind of season and a half long transfer shit where the club says they want 30 mil and they offer 18 million and then we have to sit through speculation and then we get a knockdown option on our original option that we wanted. They got Alisson and they got Van Dijk and they spent top whack on it and it pushed them over the line.
Yeah.
And I think this is my problem, because I echo a lot of what you're saying there, and I've never been particularly like, shall I say, like, it seems ridiculous to say, but like pro Levy, but I've never really been anti him. Stratford, I think, was some people differ. Some people think it was him strong arming the council, this and that. I personally think he would have gone if we'd have got on it. But it's just my opinion. I think the intention was to go. I don't think it was brinkmanship. I think
And it took a long time to recover from that. And yeah. I did. And I forgave him. Like, he ain't like fucking my wife cheating on me or something. But I got round it and let it go eventually. But that was sacrilegical. Yeah. I absolutely hated him for that. And I got over it. And this Super League stuff seems there's parallels there to some degree. But sorry, mate, I'm moving away from your point.
No, no, but I mean, just ultimately now, I mean, there's a lot of talk about new manager. I can't really even be that asked to go on about that today, because the way I kind of feel right now, this point in time with Spurs, is that, like, I've seen the kind of the projects with Yol, I've seen it with Redknapp, I've seen Ramos, I've seen kind of AVB come in, we've seen Sherwood come in for a bit, although, you know, I think that was just kind of a bit of a placeholder, really, wasn't it? And then we've seen Pochettino, and we've seen this cycle rinse and repeat so many times now that I know a new owner isn't going to be all blue skies. But yeah, people, the kind of the default option is what you think, somebody that's got £1 billion or whatever to spend on a sports team is going to be a great person. No, I don't necessarily, but do you know what? I want us to flush the toilet. You know, I want just everything to start again from the beginning. Now, like, it feels to me that, like, the end of, like, almost like Pochettino's arc was, it shouldn't have been, but it was kind of giving us a happy ending to the old Tottenham. It was we going a whole season number. Like, this is one of those, like, achievements that people just kind of sweep under the rug, but a whole season unbeaten at home in the last season we ever play at White Hart Lane is, you know, that's something that deserves to be, like, heralded so much more than I think it is. But, you know, it isn't. Yeah, that 16-17 season, we finished on, 86 points? Like, enough points to basically win the Premier League probably most instances that it's ever existed before that point. We ran into that insane Conte Chelsea side that pretty much set the bar before the Centurions and this mad Liverpool team came along. But again, people forget that. People want to forget that it's just Tottenham bottled it again, you know? But
Do you know what it is, mate? While all of this is, it's exhaust. We're having to deal with a lot towards the end of a season that's been so jam-packed. Like, there's been so much football. I don't know if you felt about this, Jack, and why this is almost more exhausting this period than I've ever experienced as a Spurs fan before. It's because off the back of what's happening socially into society, and how lockdown's affected a lot of people, and how it's changed the way we follow football. And then to lose your manager after really kind of semi-toxic last four or five months that have been led by this manager that everybody said, all the Man United fans said, this is how it's going to end up. And they were right. It ended up exactly how they said. And it just feels like a lot to have to talk about and compartmentalise and figure out what's next after everything that we've been going for. I feel like we just need a break. And I'm, as much as I love Tottenham and I'm looking forward to watching them play against Sheffield United, I am. And as soon as it kicks off, it's a lovely bit of escapism, but I feel like we need the season over. It's been such a long season. Remember, we're playing qualifying games in August or at the end of July, and then a game every four weeks. This hasn't been normal. And I just feel like people are being reactionary and they're being angry, and they should be. But they're perhaps a little bit more reactionary and angrier than they would have been otherwise if we haven't experienced the season we had. And for no one has it been plain sailing apart from Manchester City. And even them, the first part of the season, people were questioning whether or not Guardiola was the guy. Yeah. You know, when they were like eighth or ninth consistently for the first three or four weeks, and maybe a month in. I can't remember when they went top of the league and they stayed there. But for the first part of the season, they were questioned. Perhaps only David Moyes has come away with this season without any criticism, which is mental. So it's just been a weird one, and I'm kind of ready for it to be over. And, you know, I'm not really looking forward to the Euros, then another season, then a World Cup in the middle of it, then an end of the season, then...
Well, a whole summer. But the thing is, mate, this is the thing, we're not going to get a break, because it's going to be a whole summer of Harry Kane, is he going to leave, isn't he going to leave, you know...
I'm fine with that, mate, though, to be honest. I don't want him to leave. I don't want him to go, obviously. I want Harry Kane to be at Spurs forever. But there are lots of teams that play very well without Harry Kane. Lots of them in our league.
Uh-oh. Are you putting the tin hat on, Flav? Is this it?
I'm saying that I think the people are catastrophizing over the idea that Harry Kane leaves Tottenham, like we won't be able to recover, and we will.
I do know what you mean. I do think, though, this season, for example, we would have been absolutely fucked
without him. We would have been fucked for a long time without him. Like, he's the best striker I've ever seen with my own eyes, and probably one of the best strikers that will ever play in England, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. But you can't... If he decides to leave after being, 9, 10 years in the... Is it 8, 7? I don't know how many years he's played in the first team now. It feels like maybe 8 years. Like, eventually, all players leave. You've just got to, I feel like we will recover from it, although it'll be difficult. You know, he's not leaving this summer anyway, not with 3 years left on the contract. No one would be able to afford him. It's just about what can we do if next season is his last season? What can we do to maximise having him for another season before he goes? Or can Levy actually do his fucking job in terms of putting the team first, get a manager in that excites Harry Kane, bring in play, because our squad isn't awful. It's not awful. I think with the right manager, that would have been a top four squad. But just where the problems lie in the squad, and maybe in a couple parts of the first team, defence and maybe midfield as well, just strengthen properly there. Get a new manager in. And then Harry Kane next season, if he had a good season, might think, actually, I don't need to go anywhere because this is good enough. We're building something. We're at the start of a cycle again. But, I was speaking to Paul Machin, who's on the Redmen TV, he's like a big Liverpool fan. And he said, like, I can see where the problems are at Tottenham because the core of that squad is exactly the same as the first game when Klopp played for Liverpool. You had Lloris, Dier, Alderweireld, Son, Kane, and that's your starting five. So there needs to be a fresh look at what we're doing, and then perhaps we're in a position where Harry Kane's going to stay for another year. So let's give this an opportunity to actually convince him to stay, that our ambitions match his. But you've heard this so many times before. I remember Terry Sheringham saying, I had to leave because the ambitions of the club don't reflect mine.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm just sick of so many of them. You know, like you're touching on that. It's not even that I don't rate some of them or I don't like them or anything. I'm just tired of so many of their faces now, you know, and I'm sure they're...
it's like, your mate, some of your mates, isn't it? You're like, you're some of your best mates.
Yeah.
But after a while, a couple of days of them, you're like, I don't want to look at your face. In fact, I want to punch your face. I can't look at you anymore.
When you do one of those, like you know, and it's a stag do or something, and the old band get back together, and you all go away, and everyone's buzzing. They're like, oh, as we call it, remember that night out in our 20s when this thing, oh, yeah, remember that was quality in that? And then as soon as that's sort of gone, you all realise you're all fat, tired, miserable. You just want to, you can't be asked to sit in a bar anymore. Like, you just want to go sit at home, watch Netflix, pretend you don't exist, you know?
And so you're talking about like people like, I don't know, Toby Alderweireld's face as an existential crisis, basically.
Yeah, that hair. Just look at it. Just change it, mate.
I've seen that hair so much over the last 8 years.
How can you be asked? Literally every single game. I think about this, right? I have some days like during this lockdown where, do you know what? I haven't showered some days. I've just woken up and thought, I'm not going to do it today. I'm not going to. Like, and I mean, I am a slob, to be fair. So, you know, that sort of comes with the territory. But when I think about him going out every single game with that immaculate hairstyle, it's, yeah. How can he be bothered?
I know, you're right. I think that's what it is. We're just sick of looking at their faces.
I am. Lloris especially.
Like, he's been there so long.
He has. He's sick of us, though, as well. He's sick of us. He doesn't want to. Like, he's the partner that in the morning, you know, you wake up, you're right, darling, how are you doing? Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah.
Yeah. He stayed for the kids, basically, didn't he?
He definitely has. But then he realises he hates the kids as well now. Yeah. They've all let him down. They haven't studied hard enough.
He turned to drink as well. The reason why he did what he did is because of how average and abject his Spurs career has been.
And he knows that ultimately all this, he tries to project it outwards, but it's all just a reflection on him. That's all that it is. The chocolate-wristed, baguette-munching.
He's fantastic, though, by the way. You've seen his bottle job. His save percentage, like, is huge compared to anyone else in the league. Like, you say Harry Kane saved us, so has Lloris this season. I know he's prone to a howler, but without him, we'd have been screwed as well.
Yeah, he turned into a stats nonce.
I think they're right. They have their place. I'm not sort of overly into it. I get annoyed when other people talk to me about stats, but I don't mind thinking about them every now and then. I like XG.
I was going to say, is that why you haven't been on Extra Inch yet? But you have been on there, haven't you?
Been on there once to talk about the Fighting Cock. No, I haven't been on there talking like the level. They properly love football, the sport, you know, the technical aspect to it. Why one system works better than the other, and why X. I don't know. I don't really. It's not for me, that kind of stuff, which is why we split. Really, that's why. Why the Extra Inch went and done their thing and why we did ours, because it was clear that we were having two different conversations, and yeah, it was a good idea.
I'm just saying, I'd heard rumours there was a punch-up. That's what I'd heard.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Windy's, people like dig Windy out and all this, but they don't know secretly. Like,
oh, he's a dark man.
He's fucking horrible.
Like, yeah, he's horrible.
I've seen him do stuff, like...
I've seen things that are unnecessary.
It's all that... All the hard lads that dig him out on Twitter, you know, all this. If I see him down the lane,
he would kick the shit out of a lot of you.
He would. He'd bite. He bites.
But he's kind of above it as well. This is what is, you know, all that shit. Anyway, just to be serious for a second, man, is fucking pathetic. Like, people are digging him out and saying all this stuff to him. You're talking to a human being who casts an opinion about a football club, and because. I don't know where it comes from, jealousy, or they just don't like what he's saying, but you don't have to like it. You don't have to look at it. The amount of people I mute on Twitter, I might mute 4 people a day on Twitter. Anyone says anything remotely I don't like, I mute them. It doesn't matter if they make sense. If anyone is critical about Tottenham, even though they're within their rights, they get muted. I've created a beautiful echo chamber where I only read stuff that I agree with. And if anyone in that echo chamber... sort of breaks the line and starts tweeting other stuff, they get muted. And it's great.
You're like an old school communist dictator. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with echo chambers. They're fantastic. It makes you feel like you feel your day is better for listening to people that you agree with than it is being challenged constantly. It's exhausting being challenged constantly. I don't want to think. I've reached 40. I reckon I've done all my thinking. I've done all my growing and adapting. I just want to get old, miserable, and be left alone.
I am getting to that point now when, you know, when I was a bit younger, I'd be like, what's my fucking dad? Why is he always so fucking miserable all the time?
Angry.
He's always going
dad's...
like, come on, fucking cheer up, you miserable ball bag. And now he's suddenly like, oh.
Yeah, oh, I get it. Right, my dad is one of my, we call it, he's saved in my brother's phone as Angry Dad. Like, that's his name in our phone because he's just so angry at everything. But we do kind of get it. And this is what I'm saying, is I'm not taking people's opinions on board anymore, because I think that my dad, he sort of watches the news and gets angry at it, whereas I don't watch the news. So I'm avoiding situations that I can be, get at for things to make me angry. And Spurs on Twitter does that. Like, after a game, I don't go anywhere near it. If we've lost, don't go anywhere near Twitter, let alone tweet my opinion. Nowhere. No, just don't look at it. If someone asks me, I don't read it. Nothing. I'm not on. I've turned all notifications off on Twitter. Social media, fundamentally, when it comes to sport, is a negative thing. It makes supporting your club worse, not better. So, yeah, that's my method of dealing this season. That's been a tough one.
It's quite fun, isn't it? Just putting something out there and just leaving it. Just,
you know, the grenade.
That's it. Just saying something. Oh, Arsenal are fucking shit, aren't they? Aren't they, lads? Arsenal are shit. Look at all them retweets. Fucking yeah. Love it. Fucking yeah. Love it.
I put a tweet out the other day which pissed people off because I said, you know, when you're writing a tweet, the point, if you're going to spend time crafting a tweet, is there's an element of craft to it, right? So I've written this tweet about Ryan Mason saying I hadn't even had a threesome by the time Ryan Mason became manager of Spurs, knowing that using the word threesome, it's going to agitate people, or it's just funny, isn't it? It's just something funny to say. People are like, all right, Virgin, bit of a humble brag that, mate. You had a threesome, have you? I'm like, firstly, no, I hadn't had a threesome by the age of 29. It was something funny to write. Fucking lighten up, for fuck's sake. Oh, mate. A bit of a humble brag there. Bit of a humble brag. I see what you're doing. I was like, you're a sad little boy. You are a sad little boy. And I'm 40. I'm 40 years old. Anyway, look, it's fucking people, isn't it?
I mean, well, it is, isn't it? They're just joyless. Hell is other people, as the famous quote goes.
Sartre.
I mean, what does the future? Because, I mean, I think we can sort of safely assume Enoch most likely aren't going to be selling up anytime soon. I can't see anybody fronting up the money. I mean, if you think about how hard we make it to fucking sell Moussa Sissoko or Harry Winks, I can't imagine they're going to be, you know, letting control of a multi-potentially billion-pound brand go very
exactly
easily.
What we said on the Fighting Cock. It's just come out today, actually, just a few minutes before recording this. Imagine how, they want to eke out every penny from selling Tom Carroll or whatever it might be. I think you've got 12 million for Tom Carroll to Swansea. All right, if he can get that for Tom Carroll to Swansea, if I'm right, it might
17
be
17 million for Wimmer. We got
fucking hell. Yeah, exactly, Wimmer. You know, when you said Wimmer there, I had to think, who the fuck is that? Yeah. No, you're right. So if he's doing that, imagine negotiating him on about his own value, not the players, his value. How is he going to maximise his profit? He'd end up selling the club for £500 million more than it's actually worth, and it will take years. So. And you know, and I appreciate I'm into sort of anti-establishment activism, and I really enjoyed what happened in the Super League stuff. I really did. Like the climb down was really satisfying, and fans were being reactive, and you know, it was a bit awkward. Maybe we could talk about the Super League stuff, but you know, and the kind of awkward alliance between Sky Sports, the Premier League, FIFA, and UEFA. Hypocritical that is, but I, you know, and I admire the people going after leaving Enoch because they want a better football club. But the reality is, it's not even a public limited company anymore. It's a private company. They own the club. They own our football club. They own the brand. They own Tottenham Hotspur. They own THFC as a trademark. The only thing they don't own is Yids, because they can't trademark that, because they can't make money off of it because of the, you know, how loaded it is. So getting rid of them isn't going to be done through protest, and it's not going to be done. It's going to be done when someone else stumps up the cash that they want to get out. And the same thing with Arsenal. You know, I know it's like impressive all the numbers they had and whatnot, but why would Kroenke sell? Why? He doesn't even go to the games. He's not interested in your protest. He's interested in the bottom line. And if he did sell, I don't know if you've looked into any of this Spotify stuff, but that guy doesn't have enough money to buy Arsenal. And I mean, if he did, there's not going to be a lot left for transfers and whatnot.
And no, I mean, his worth and his assets are two very different things. And this is one of those sort of, I don't in any way profess to be any sort of, you know, I can barely even fucking make sense of my bank statement. Let alone,
yeah, but you just say, it doesn't matter if you know, you just say it with enough authority and people believe it. Well, that's what I do.
That's it, isn't it? That's what we do, podcasters, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
just spew our opinions out.
Sometimes I say stuff, right, and I'll go, I'm pretty sure that's not true. Just don't admit it.
No one will fact check me, don't worry. Like,
they do. Right. I do get that as well. I do get people fact checking me saying this is bollocks. I got Windy fact check me the other day on WhatsApp. I enjoyed the podcast, but what you said about Pochettino was incorrect. You're right.
But you know, it's this whole thing. This, because what you sort of saying there as well is very true, and that's kind of, it's again, you know how I was saying at the top end, it's this whole conflicting era of being a Spurs fan and a football fan in general. Because I did like a big sort of Twitter thread about it the other day, because I was stewing on it, and I don't really actually use Twitter that much anymore for a lot of the reasons you said. I just started to find it a very... I'll tell you exactly what, because a few, like, I'm some fucking any person of note or anything, but a couple of people have always said, why don't you really use Twitter anymore? And I'll tell you the exact moment I didn't is because I tweeted something after Ajax, after Mora basically scored, and I was out in Dam Square just fucking completely, absolutely buzzing, and I can't remember, I just tweeted something like, you know, it's days like this when you don't really just, you know, you don't give a fuck about any of it. Keep your silverware, keep your this is what football's about.
Yeah.
And immediately, Spurs fans, immediately in the wake of this, typical fucking happy clapper. We haven't won anything. And I just thought, you know what? It's not for me anymore. I don't need it. You know, I cannot be asked. But obviously, because of lockdown and everything, you start to get a bit sucked back in. So I just...
Yeah, you need it. You need it for work as well, like, to be fair. I need it for... I can't abandon social media, but I think my mental health would be better if I didn't have it. For real, I'm not joking there. I think fundamentally, social media isn't a positive thing at all. Positive things can happen from it, but... And, you know, if we've seen, there's going to be a media blackout, social media blackout across football for 4 days. Interestingly, it could be the weekend that Man City win the Premier League. They won't tweet it because of all the racist shit and stuff. And it's exhausting. And it's not even that we, you know, obviously as a white man, I don't have to deal with that sort of shit. But there's enough sort of negativity and people out there that just makes social media just such a ball ache. And this is why I've adapted the way I have, or the way I use it, rather. There's nothing, you know, intelligent about what I'm doing. I just look at it less, and I mute people that I feel that might upset me in the future. And therefore, I minimise the amount of damage. And I say it like social media does to me. And it's not just social media, it's WhatsApp groups, you know. This constant conversation between people. And with Spurs, given this year, with the way Spurs have gone and how sort of split the fan base have been, it's been such an exhausting experience that, you know, it's affected relationships with my mates, you know.
Yeah, it's been shite. It's been horrible.
Yeah, people are really like your mates, and you're having a go at each other, and you're constantly trying to defend your position. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's not healthy for friends to have to go through. The club has, you know, Jose Mourinho specifically has split, you know. Oh, I don't know what I'm talking about.
It's just, I know what you mean, but so much of this stuff is, it's tied to ego. It's not so much even an opinion anymore. People, it all gets kind of projected out there as in, this is me, this is my identity, this is my stance. It's like, but opinions can come and go, opinions can change, you know. It doesn't need to be that, because you've said at one point, you know, I was... At the start, I before we signed him, I've been one of the ones singing "You're Not Special Anymore." I fucking hate Mourinho. I fucking hate what a sexist cunt he is with Eva Canero. All this type of stuff. He's a dinosaur. Man United had no identity under him. The second we announced him, though, as I will happily attest to, in my heart of hearts, with Pochettino gone, a manager I love more than probably anyone in my lifetime other than Martin Jol, It fell to pieces, and I thought, fucking hell, we got Mourinho in there, buzzing. He'll win us something. He will win us something. It wasn't good enough for United to win the Europa League. Be fucking good enough for me too. And I reckon he can do that for us. I'll be honest with you, in my heart of hearts, I had a sneaking suspicion we were going to win the Premier League under him. Sneak it. Just sneak it in this COVID. I thought, we're not the best team, but we got Kane, we got Son, we started the season flying, and I just thought, we're going to do it. But it was, to me, it was sealed. Like, it was genuinely, not to be knee-jerk, but being complete knee-jerk, it sealed it for me. The first proper test we had with that Liverpool team when it fell to pieces, I was just like, nah, it's not happening. But going back to what you were saying is that hypocrisy in football and that conflicted feeling is something that has really been brought to the fore, and it does tie into the whole idea of it being exhausting. Because on one hand, like you say, being anti-establishment, being against something like the ESL, was horrible. It's disgusting. You know, take out even the moral and ethical implications, of which there are plenty, right? Just on that ground level, it's boring. We were saying on this podcast like a few weeks ago, me and Raj, like it. You don't want Tottenham versus Barcelona to become something that's just like, I might as well slap that on, like it's an episode of EastEnders or Coronation Street or something.
Of course,
you know, you want to be building up to that for weeks. You want to know we finished top four. We got there ahead of fucking Arsenal. We got there and we've drawn. You see all the names coming out the hat. Barcelona, fucking yes. Tottenham in the new camp, fucking amazing. Like, maybe we can win out there. Maybe we can win in this, like, old world famous theatre of football. You don't want that to be so devalued that it's like, what should we slap on? Another fucking episode of, like, whatever dog shit there is on Netflix or that, because that's what it becomes, an episodic format. It becomes half of the course.
I'd rather not play. I'd rather never play Barcelona again than play them that way.
You know?
I'd rather never qualify for the, to you know, on merit than have to. If the only way we're going to play Barcelona in the future is through this format, then I'd rather not do it.
But this is what we're saying about the conflicting stuff is, the flip side of this, mate, is that you've touched on, is that now we see UEFA, FIFA, the Premier League, Sky Sports as the good guys, the ones beating the drum against all this stuff. And we forget the fact that the Premier League, who, for all their hand-wringing, did exactly the same thing to the EFL. They did exactly the same thing. They didn't want relegation at first. They wanted to take all the best clubs in England, stick them in a preserved little league somewhere, and just have them generate money for Sky Sports. And that's all it was. And that's why, you know, Gary Neville can come out and have these impassioned rants about, oh, Man United should be relegated and this and that. What, whilst he's gaming the fucking lower leagues like he is, using his wealth to make Salford a better team, you know? Whilst he's the figurehead of a thing like Sky Sports that has consistently... What have they said to a team like Tottenham that for the years and years and years we've been knocking on the door? And let's be honest, yeah, you're gonna have an Orient fan or someone saying, oh, because Tottenham have done it the right way, but we have, relatively speaking, we haven't had a sugar daddy come in like City or Chelsea have, and we don't have the brand value of someone like Liverpool or Manchester United, where they can pretty much infinitely loan money because everybody knows they're good for it because their brands are so strong and massive around the world. Tottenham have had to build a sustainable project. And what we've done the past few years should be heralded. But instead, we're called bottle jobs. We're called losers. We're made fun of for daring to dream, for knocking on the door by people like Sky, because they have a vested interest in retaining the status quo. What am I supposed to hate my club because we want to break the existing status quo that's shit to create a new status quo that's also shit? I don't know. And it leaves us all in this position. So that's why I kind of boil it down to these emotional ideas, like you say, of I want to see us play Barcelona and I want it to be exciting. I want us to get into a top four race with us. Like, the only thing this year we've got going for us now, I mean, I don't think we'll finish in the top four. And to me, it's just like, let's just fucking finish above Arsenal, please. Yeah. They're so shit. please don't let that be the final nail in this coffin, that we also have to finish below them, because I really do you know what I mean?
Like, that would be unbearable. Don't get me wrong, I fully appreciate that. I've been watching I'm watching the league table like a hawk, and the fact that they drew to Fulham and drew to Everton, it's almost like
they lost to Everton.
Sorry, they did lose to Everton. Sorry, yeah, my bad. And you know, it was like the relief when that result came through, and it was one of them ones where I was like so sure that Everton were going to lose that game, and they were going to catch us to 4 points. That, you know, I watched Sleepers instead, Lorenzo Carcatera, which is
what's a most cheerful film.
I thought this is going to be more entertaining—a film about kids getting buggered in prison than watching Arsenal beat Everton. And after I got over the turmoil of watching Sleepers, I switched it on, and lo and behold, Everton had won, and there'd been this massive blooper from Leno. But you'd think, given that, who are they playing away this week? You think if we beat Sheffield United and they don't win, then that should be done and dusted. You'd imagine.
You never can say them.
No, I mean 100%.
You know what it's like with us. It's just.
Yeah.
It's never. You can't ever take anything. And that's is that part of though? Because we sort of we mythologize this stuff. But is that?
Oh, fuck,
is that what keeps us coming back?
What? Sorry, I was looking.
Just this idea, you know, because people are always like, you can never predict this team, but ultimately, that's why we love them. And I'm like, I sort of try and tell myself that and wear that as a badge of honour, but I'm like, do you know what? It would be nice to just fucking win sometimes.
Yeah, like, I don't know if that's what brings you back. What brings you back is it's largely following Spurs, a positive habit. Habits are fine, aren't they? If they lend itself to making your life happier. And remember that Tottenham, the football club, and what happens on the pitch is a small part of what it means to follow your football team, right? So the conversations you're having, the drinking down the pub, I know there was a massive fight in the Beehive, but up until that point, it looked like that Spurs are back. Do you know what I mean? Fans are together.
Spurs on Spurs season. Come on, we need to have a few of those every now and again.
Get the blood going a little bit. Now, it looked like, oh, fuck, we actually are returning back to normal, and going football will be something we can do again. And look, my point is we watch Spurs because it's a part of who we are. And it's not. It is more than a game, because it means that you have better relationships with your family. Like my brothers and my dad, you know, I love them to bits. But I bet our relationship wouldn't be as good as if Spurs didn't exist. And that's how important it is. And that's what keeps us going back. Even if we were in League Two, it wouldn't matter. You know, it'd be shit. Obviously, the football down there is garbage. But compared, you know, because of what the Premier League's done, but it would still be the same. You'd still have each other, and that's why we keep going back. And this has been a tough season. And if we get it right in the summer, get the right manager in, somebody plays nice, attractive football, someone like Brendan Rodgers, I just think everyone would feel a lot better about being Spurs, and we can just get on with washing our team again.
He ain't gonna come to us though, is he, Brenton?
Why?
Yeah, he's 2-3 years into an exciting project with a Leicester City where he's got all the control. He's guiding him into the Champions League. What? Come to Tottenham, here's 20 mil to spend on someone's shit, and you can't sell Harry Winks.
Yeah, but that may not be what he gets offered. You know what I mean?
No, that's it, mate. That's the problem.
That is it. Yeah, I think it's still come. I don't think his ego will allow him not to come. That would be my feeling. And remember, you saying like about a project. He left Celtic halfway through the third season, where they were going to do an unprecedented triple, and he was like, you know what? Nah, I'm going to go Leicester and start again. So don't trust him. We can definitely get him.
He left his wife and kids as well, didn't he? So you know.
I won't say this on your pod.
Okay. Do it. Go for it.
It's just, yeah, I mean, he's interested in, but it's not even a bad thing, is it? People like what they like, but, you know, he's chose to leave his wife and kids, and actually, do you know what? Can we just move on? I don't want to say it. I just don't want to say it. I thought it, I don't want to say it. It's a long time since the old fighting cock existed. I've learnt my lesson. I've been burnt too many times. Let's just move on, please.
We will do now. I won't go too Paxman on you then, mate. Yeah, you know I mean? Good. It doesn't reflect well on me either.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, it's true.
So what is that? Is that your man Brenton? That's who you're leading the charge for.
I mean, I guess right now I just fucking couldn't be fucked, whoever. But I just feel like he's the best guy. I wanted Nagelsmann just because, you know, why not? Feels like progressive coach, doesn't it? Feels like we might move forward, play a different way. But Brendan Rodgers had a great career as a manager, in my opinion. And I don't think he would do anything other than improve Tottenham, especially the way we play. I think he'd get us up in the league.
He's such a weird man.
I know.
So weird.
Yeah, I know. But it's look, people are weird. We've got to look past that.
That's true. But I'm not. I mean, I'm not really. But what makes you say that, mate?
I didn't say it. You said I'm not. I made a noise.
It was a bit of a kind of contrary noise. You know, I pick up on these things, mate. I'm sharp.
No, you're not weird.
That's good.
No, I get it though. I get the teeth and the way he kind of. You know, the David Brent-esque way of him being, but I didn't give a shit. Like, I would have...
He's toned down the David Brent stuff a bit.
I don't care that Jose Mourinho is a manager and he can be a right arsehole, right? So if I don't care about that, I don't care if Brendan Rodgers is a little bit cringy every now and then, if we're playing great football and Leicester do play really good football. The best performance, one of the best performances against Spurs this season was Leicester at White Hart Lane. I thought they were just fantastic. I don't think they had fun in the Vardy. Anyway, but you know, I feel like that could be the one. Like, what are the alternatives now? It's like Scott Parker, no.
I quite like Ten Hag. I quite like the Ajax lad, you know.
But we don't know, though, do we? Just know that he fucking done us. But other than that, Ten Hag.
He's bald and there's good like quotes. He said some good stuff about Pep Guardiola once, didn't he? And
did he?
Sort of got a bit excited about it. And...
If you had to ask me to explain Ten Hag's football philosophy, or even more so Nagelsmann, I'd be lost. And that's what like things like the extra inch are good for, because they do understand that thing. But don't come to the fighting cock if you want us to break down why Ten Hag would be our manager. What I would say is, well, when we played Ajax, they were fantastic, and you know, that's why we, you know, I'd have the same sort of approach to when we signed Juan de Ramos. He tore us apart when he was the Sevilla manager, and that's about as much
really,
as I could be bothered to.
That was kind of his audition, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then we went over and we screw over Yol to get him in, yeah,
and then broke and then him. Look. And then we same thing's happened here. We brought AVB in. Well, no, actually Chelsea broke him, so we can't claim that one.
But we helped. We helped because after us, he went and drove rally cars for 3 years. So
that's true. We kind of like he was getting his head out the mud again a bit, and we extended a hand to help pull him out the mud, and then just fucking pushed him back under again.
And put our foot
get
on
down
his head.
There, you fucking fucking dickhead. All right, mate. So I've taken a lot of your time today. I guess to wrap it all up, to bring this wonderful coming of people together to an end.
Coming of people together.
Yeah, I know. I'm just
nice.
Yeah. I'm trying to speak the fighting cock lingo, mate. You know, it's all
just,
willies and all that in it. You know, am I doing it right, mate?
Yeah. You know, just quickly, Erik ten Hag. I don't think he's got a partner or a wife or anything.
Oh, that's a red flag, isn't it?
Isn't it? 51 without a partner. That is like, what's he up to? I don't trust him.
If he's got a basement, do you know what I mean? Because I know he's Dutch. Lots of the Dutch have basements as well. So.
Also, and you know how liberal they are over in Holland, in Netherlands. Like he could be into anything. No wife to check him. No or husband to check him. What's he really into? What's Ten Hag's bag? I need to know that.
He's experimented with poo, at the very least.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
Hanging upside down, full of, you know, in one of those gimp suits where a pretty lady fills that costume full of poo.
No, he's got one of those, like, a breathing tube to his mouth, but it's connected to her bum hole.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's a real thing. That's a real thing.
Oh, is it? Oh, is it? Yeah, shit.
Too specific to not have seen that before. That is a real thing. I've seen it. I've been to Amsterdam. It's good. Love it. One of my favourite places on earth because it's so liberal.
Do you remember that old video? You remember before sort of viral videos were viral? There was a thing called the Church of Fudge that did it, that did rounds in emails and stuff like that.
Yeah, it rings a bell.
Just maybe like on an incognito window at something, and if you get a bit of, you know, a moment alone, just see if you can find it. Just look for the Church of Fudge.
I'm not going to do that.
Old video. I just anyone listening as well. Just
I mean, I'm not into that.
You don't have to. It's an educational exercise.
No, but I'm not into that. I'm not into like Tub Girl. I'm not into seeing fucking really horrendous stuff. Like, there's a bad injury in the UFC, like there was this weekend. Everyone's like, oh, have you seen this? I don't want to see it. I don't want to see that. The only one I'm all right with is lemonparty.org. I'm fine with that one. But other than that, pretty much not interested.
So in a world full of poo and broken legs, be a bit more Lemon Party. That's the...
I think we'd all be... The world would be better if everyone just saw all right with things like Lemon Party.
I don't disagree.
Like, if you're not, if you don't get to like 70, I'd say what, like 65, 70, and you're still exploring and finding new stuff about yourself, then Godspeed and all power to you.
That's it. And I think that's a nice place to bring this podcast to a close. Thank you very much for coming on, Flav. It's been educational, but I hope you've enjoyed the experience.
Yeah, I have. Thanks.
Yeah,
thank you, mate. Anytime you want me,
that's good.
You should come on the fucking Cotmore.
Send me an invite then, mate. Get on, mate, every now and again.
And yeah, I know, but it's just fucking. Well, how about what are you doing Friday?
Don't know. I'm moving house actually.
Are you? Wait, you can't tell me. All right, let's stop this so I can ask you that question.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. If you do want to listen to, well, obviously I don't need to tell you to listen to the Fighting Cop because they've monopolize the podcasting circuit.
Well, we know what's happening. What's happening is fucking, like, we didn't monopolize it, but we just happen to be one of the early adopters of podcasting, as you'll know, well know. But there's fucking podcasts everywhere. Every bastard is doing a podcast now, cannibalizing our audience. no, cannibalizing would mean we would do like murdering our. They're just like take. Like everyone's just and if I say one thing that upsets someone, there's like 50 podcasts in the wings just going, come listen to us.
Yeah, don't listen to Flav say. You know what I heard? He's a millionaire. You know that? He's a millionaire. That's
I'm
it.
I'm not a millionaire.
That's what I've heard, mate.
A millionaire, Jesus! I'm
like Robbie. You know, everyone says that whenever Arsenal lose, they say Robbie's going to buy himself a new Rolls Royce.
Yeah, yeah,
that's it.
Did you see him get hijacked by Talksport the other day?
I did. Yeah, I. You know what? I'm going to say I think there's a lot of hypocrisy going on there. You know.
Yeah, just a bit.
I don't want to die on a hill of like defending Arsenal fan TV, but at the same time, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. If you do want to listen to The Fighting Cock, you know where you can listen to it. You can find it on all your best podcast suppliers.
Yep.
Flav's got a Patreon as well, where they put out lots and lots of other content. Like, you can, you know, reflections on matches as they've just happened. Look ahead.
Yeah, we do that. We also have the other podcast, which isn't about football altogether. It's just having a laugh, really, about funny things. Sort of similar to that Ten Hag conversation. And yeah, there's also, we did preview stuff and I'm producing a podcast series called No Holds Barred, which is where I interview people that I find interesting. And the first season's going to be out hopefully within 2 weeks or so. It's about 26 conversations I had during lockdown.
Sick. Like the sound of that, mate. Just
to pique people's interest, cool. One of them's with a porn star called Shona Rivers, which is interesting.
Look forward to that. Saucy.
Yeah, saucy.
Obviously, subscribe to Rule the Roost through all the usual podcast suppliers. Thank you very much. Goodbye. Come on, you Spurs.
Come on, Spurs.
Thank you. Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.